You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
In a season largely defined by their inexplicable blown leads, the final one might prove most costly of all. With that as the backdrop, welcome in to another postgame episode here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Wednesday morning, we're going to be breaking down the finale to the 2018-2019 regular season in our usual three-point style. And in this one, of course, we're talking about the gut punch of a loss the Rockets suffered late Tuesday night in Oklahoma City, 112-111. James Harden scored 39 points, had 10 boards. Chris Paul had 24 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. Gerald Green had 5 made threes off the bench. But the Rockets blew a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, a 4-point lead in the final 30 seconds with the basketball. Give some credit to the Thunder, Russell Westbrook, Paul George, who hit the game winner. They had some enormous plays down the stretch of this game. They showed you why they are supremely talented and not a team that anyone at the top of the playoff bracket wants to face. From Houston's standpoint, though, the biggest concern is that this is not a one-game blip. This is something that we have seen a consistent theme of how the Rockets play with leads up and down this entire slate from October all the way through April. So if the Rockets finish up the regular season, and make no mistake about it, they had the number two playoff seed in their grasp. Everything they have been working towards, if they had won this game because Denver lost at Utah, they would have been the number two seed, home court in not just round one, but round two, on the opposite side of the bracket from Golden State, and also pushing these Thunder to the eighth seed to play Golden State and actually giving them a tough matchup right out of the chute in game or round one with a gimpy Steph Curry. Yeah, this was everything for the Rockets. It was all on the table. They had it up 14 in the final 9-plus minutes, up by 4 with under 30 seconds to go and the basketball, and yet they could not close the door. Now, as far as the seeds go, it's not final. If the Rockets got some help tonight, they could move all the way up to number 2. It's also possible the Thunder could fall all the way to 8. There's a lot of possibilities. We'll get to those in segment 2 of today's 3 points recap. Then in segment 3, we'll talk about a few positives. I touched on them earlier. I don't want to make it seem like the Rockets were just a disaster on Tuesday. After all, they did lead for the majority of the fourth quarter and really the majority of the basketball game. They had a 90% plus win probability at one point. So clearly on the road at OKC in a game the Thunder clearly needed to avoid the 8 spot, if you're that close, it's not as if everything was just awful and horrible. We'll get to that in segment 3. Here off the top, though, to me, the biggest theme is the continuation of what we have seen all season long with regards to the Rockets and leads, and in particular, their offensive lulls when it matters most. Because in this one, if you look at the balance of the 48 minutes, the Rockets' defense got a lot better in the fourth quarter. Throughout the first three, it was very spotty. They missed some assignments. They weren't communicating as well as they usually do. If you look at the full 48 minutes, you would say the defense in the first three quarters was the problem. The problem I have with looking at the game through that lens is that no matter what happens in an NBA basketball game, it's doubtful, especially on the road, that you are just going to go out and dominate. The odds are you see a game like the Rockets and the Thunder with so much on the line for both teams, it's going to find a way, the game that is, to be there for the taking in the fourth quarter, and it's just up to you to make plays. And in this one, the issue for the Rockets, they scored just 7 points in the first 8 minutes of the fourth quarter. They entered with a 13-point lead. When Oklahoma City flipped a 14-point deficit with about 9:20 left to a 1-point lead with 5:20 left, basically a 4-minute 15-0 run, they did it because the Rockets scored 0 points. And then, after the final made shot, a Russell Westbrook three that put the Thunder up one with just over 5 minutes left. After the final made shot of that run, the Rockets held the Thunder to just 4 points over the next 5+ minutes. The Thunder did have a heck of a closing flurry after Chris Paul missed the three when the Rockets had it up four. Westbrook made a wild three in transition. He also made a layup after a pair of Harden-made free throws. Then Harden split a pair, his 12th and 13th of the night. Cruelly, his first miss of the night was on his 13th, 12 of 13 from the line. It's hard to get on James for missing one of 13 shots. It just unfortunately came at the worst time. And then Paul George made a really tough shot over a somewhat shorter, is the best way that I can sum it up, P.J. Tucker. I didn't think that George was that wide open. He's just longer. He fired up a shot. He made a relatively difficult one with Tucker closing out on him in the corner. Tip your hat. But to get back to the defense, what really stands out is that from about the five-minute mark onward, that's 5 minutes of basketball. The Rockets held the Thunder to just 4 points. That's how good the defense was. They were locked in. They forced a Westbrook air ball in there. And yet the Rockets only led by four because they could not get their own offense going in that same stretch. They had lots of opportunities to break the game open, and they were unable to do so. Individually, it's not hard to see who the biggest culprits are. The Rockets, they largely go as Eric Gordon goes. We've said that over the past month when, since the beginning of March, he's been shooting better than 45% from behind the arc. On Tuesday night in Oklahoma City, it went back to the version of Eric Gordon from the first 4 or 5 months. 8 points on 3 of 12 shooting, just 2 of 9 from behind the arc. P.J. Tucker missed all of his 3 three-pointers. And off the bench, mentioned Gerald Green making 5 threes, 15 points. Well, the guys that you've actually had consistently in your rotation down the stretch, Austin Rivers, Daniel House Jr., Nene, had a whopping 3 points combined between them. So if you want to blame an individual or two, it's pretty obvious where you should start. For me, though, it's less about any individual. I think Eric Gordon just unfortunately had a bad night. It happens to everyone. And what concerns me most is the composition, not just of the roster, but stylistically. I know Mike D'Antoni was not out there. He was released from the hospital yesterday, but obviously he's not going to just get released from the hospital after suffering for days with an intestinal virus and then fly to Oklahoma City and coach. That said, even with D'Antoni not out there, it's not like Jeff Bezdelic, Roy Rogers, the guys who are doing anything radically different. The concern I have is the predictability of the offense, and that despite the high highs, is there something with the way this team is built, not just from the standpoint of who the players are, but also the system, that makes them prone to these types of extended lulls? I know we don't like to talk about it, but the 0-for-27 a year ago in the Western Conference Finals, I always recoil when folks bring that up because, of course, it should have been 1-of-28. The Harden waved off three by Scott Foster would have been a 4-point play was simply ridiculous. That said, while 1-of-28 looks a little better than 0-of-27, did it really change the narrative all that much? The Rockets went ice cold at the worst time, and they did not really have another way to diversify their offense. James Harden was great in this game, 39 points, 10 rebounds. The Thunder are physical. They have Paul George, one of the best one-on-one defenders on Harden in the league. They fought through the screens really well. It's a tough matchup, and I thought James, over the balance of 48 minutes, was really great, despite the fact that he's going to take a bit of a beating because the final 10 seconds didn't go their way. What I am troubled by more than just the final 10 seconds of the game, though, is the fact that there did seem to be a cumulative mileage effect. He scored 26 in the first half, and I really thought from the outset in the second, he did not look like he had the same juice. There were loose balls that he didn't go after with as much vigor as he did in the first half. He didn't seem to have quite the same springs in his legs. And really, the game could have gotten away from the Rockets earlier, but late in the third and then a couple very early in the fourth, Gerald Green, Chris Paul, they made some really tough threes that allowed the Rockets to hold on to that 10-plus point lead for as long as they could before inevitably they finally did go cold, and then the Rockets did not have another route to turn. And again, I think some of it comes down to predictability. The Rockets, while they have a lot of shooters in terms of actual playmakers, there is still so much, even when healthy, that is on James Harden's plate. And in this particular matchup, now some of it, sure, I thought Harden deserved a few more whistles than he got. Steven Adams in particular was very, very physical with him on drives, and I thought Harden deserved more free throws than he got. And certainly that level of contact took a physical toll on him. That said, even if he does get the free throws, he's still going to have to take that much contact, because even though the Rockets, they have a lot of names, they have a lot of star power, they definitely have shooting. Clint Capela had 18 and 10, so in terms of an inside presence, even though the Rockets were out-rebounded by 14, it's not like they're devoid there. But in terms of players who generate their own offense, it's still largely James Harden. And after a first half in which he was breathtaking, outscored both Russell Westbrook and Paul George combined, had them up nearly double figures, it looked like there were some fatigue issues for James in the second half. And even though this game is going to largely be remembered for the shots that Chris Paul made in terms of CP3 individually, there were some signs, especially down the stretch in the fourth quarter, that he didn't trust himself, even relative to a year ago, as much to create separation one-on-one. It just so happened to be a game that the threes went in. And kudos to Chris, he's clutch, he's cold-blooded. What I worry about is the fact that he's 33 years old, year 14, and when the Rockets went through that aforementioned 0 of 27, 1 of 28, however you want to look at it, in the Western Conference Finals, a lot of us went back to the hamstring injury that Chris Paul suffered and said his mid-range game, that's the antidote when things go really south in terms of the three-point shooting. Which for the game, the Rockets 18 of 53, they were fine. It's just the misses came in bunches down the stretch of the game, in particular when they went ice cold. And so if there were fatigue issues from Harden, if the likes of Eric Gordon weren't making their threes, this was where you were supposed to be able to trust Chris Paul to make plays in isolation, get into the mid-range game, and make things happen. And even in the game in which Chris overall was brilliant, down the stretch of a game, it didn't feel like he or the Rockets really trusted that he could create enough separation to use that as a wrinkle in their attack. Instead, they kept going 1-2 pick and roll and largely just asking James Harden to bail them out one-on-one. And in this particular game, he could not do that. And the concern I have, I know the Rockets, their style in terms of the extreme variance, the volume of threes they take, it's largely predicated based on how talented the Warriors are. And the idea is that even if your lows are a bit lower, maybe you need that because you're going to lose anyway unless you play at absolute peak form. And if you're making a lot of threes, then your highs are higher. And if you're hot in a series, maybe that's what takes down Golden State. I can see the logic behind it. And one thing to keep in mind strategically, we are largely seeing the Rockets as a pioneer of this concept. No one has ever taken it to the extreme that they do. We're all kind of learning as they go in terms of what happens based on the fact that really, I don't believe anyone has ever seen a bar as high as it is in the modern NBA with how sick and ridiculously talented the current Golden State Warriors are. So you're having to do some unprecedented things. That said, my fear is that because you are asking so much of James Harden, they put in a lot of bombers around him, but in terms of generating your own offense, it's still largely dependent on James, perhaps even more than ever before, because relative to a year ago, Chris Paul, still a good player, but not quite the same in terms of creating separation, especially when it matters. And the shooters, while they're good and they've perked up lately, they're not so elite, like, say, a Golden State level, that you don't have games like Tuesday night, in which Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker shoot a combined 2 of 12 from 3. Actually, let's throw in Daniel House Jr. Between Gordon, Tucker, and House, that's a combined 2 of 16. The Rockets don't have a plan B. Those guys just have to keep firing. And for all that's said about, well, James Harden, he's developed a floater this year, his game is more diverse, it is. But at the end of the day, he's just one player. And at times, especially in the playoffs, there are going to be games in which he wears down if you ask him to do everything. There is such a thing as an excessive physical toll. And so the Rockets this season, it's been this incredible run by James Harden individually. But for the team as a whole to win 4 playoff series, it's going to take a team effort. And other guys are going to have to step up. And what's most concerning to me is that it's not just about the fact that they missed shots. It was also that Tuesday was a reminder that they don't really have a different dimension. If plan A isn't working, there's not really a plan B that the Rockets can turn to. And that's where the predictability of their attack concerns me a little bit. And I think that plays a role in why the Rockets have lost so many leads this year. It's not so much that they lose focus. It's that if you shoot so many threes, then you're going to have a lot of variance, because if you go cold for a stretch and on top of it, your defense is hit or miss, well, the other team is going to have opportunities to get back in it. In fact, to a small degree, I wonder if you can argue that the style is too optimized for Golden State. I know they're the gold standard, and the Rockets went 3-1 against them in the four games this season, but there were too many of these other games against non-Golden State opponents in which the offense bogged down. It got more predictable, and there wasn't a plan B that they were able to turn to. I know it didn't cost them last year, but that was a season in which everything broke their way, or nearly everything, right up until Chris Paul's hamstring. 65-17. They were a juggernaut in the clutch. Chris Paul was a year younger. The defense, from the outset, not just the final 6 weeks, was excellent. So many variables went their way, and while philosophically it's not like they were radically different a season ago, it's just their margin of error was such that really until the Warriors and then until Chris Paul's hamstring injury, no one could truly exploit it. This year, while they're good, they're not as advantaged at the margins as they were a year ago. They're much more closer to parity with the rest of the league, and that's where philosophically, maybe not against the Warriors, but against other teams, especially Oklahoma City, who they lost 3-4 against, and yes, you could see them again in the playoffs, that's where I think these things stand out a lot more. And personally, I don't have all the answers. I am not an expert on this. Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, they know a lot more than me on this. But what I'll leave you with as we close out segment one, this has gone on a bit too long and I want to move on to other things, including the standings. What I'll leave you all with is this. I'm not saying the defense was perfect, but for a team defined by two Hall of Fame guards and one of the most offensively gifted coaches in the history of the NBA, Mike D'Antoni. D'Antoni, Harden, and CP3. To see the lulls that we have seen from this group offensively, and it's not just Tuesday night, this is the latest example, but 0 points over four critical minutes as the Thunder turned a 14-point deficit into a lead, 7 points in the first 8 minutes of the fourth quarter, only building the lead to four after the defense held the Thunder to just 4 points from about the 5:30 mark until the 22nd mark. For a team as offensively gifted as the Rockets and with that much pedigree, that just should not happen. Yet again, it did. I don't know what the answer is, but my fear after seeing it happen so many times throughout the year, I don't think it's the last we've seen of it. And while it may not be a fatal flaw, after all, there are certainly things the Rockets could have done better. At the same time, even though with the loss, the Rockets, they dropped to 53-29. It's just their fourth loss in the last 24 games. They will still have home court advantage in round one, no matter what. At the same time, to win a ring, it takes 16 wins, winning four best of seven playoff series. And my concern is that this is ultimately going to bite them again. I don't know it. I hope I'm wrong. But after the latest blown lead, I'm having a tough time mustering the confidence that this is a team that has what it takes to mount four consecutive playoff series wins against upper echelon opponents, including likely the Golden State Warriors, who appear set to battle the Rockets if they advance in round two. More on that momentarily as we get to the standings portions of today's show. And remember, to get this show each and every day, subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya Podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Now, jumping back into Wednesday's program, recapping the 112-111 loss, crushing one, blowing a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter against the Oklahoma City Thunder. We spent segment one discussing what I view as philosophically the largest takeaways, the Rockets' repeated offensive lulls when it really matters most. We've seen it at times this season in their blown leads. It's been a theme. They also blew a 26-point lead against the Thunder back in February. And of course, we saw it way back in the Western Conference Finals, including the 0-27 stretch from behind the three-point arc in Game 7. And the Rockets back then, and seemingly still today, did not really have a plan B to turn to in terms of the diversity of their offensive attack. And at this point, they are who they are. There may be some things they can do offensively to change up the composition, not just all shooters around James Harden and Chris Paul. Maybe you can get someone else that can create his own offense at times in a one-on-one situation. For now, though, you are what you are. Your roster, your makeup, your philosophy is not going to radically change on the fly heading into the postseason. You just have to hope that you can band-aid and fix these issues as best you can. And perhaps some of them have to do with playing the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are a very good defensive team and have two legitimate stars in Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Tip your hat to those guys. They certainly played like it on Tuesday night. And here in segment two, we'll turn our attention to teams such as the Thunder, the rest of the league, because I think beyond the fact that the Rockets lost in excruciating fashion, the other lead storyline from this game is what it means for the playoff race, since it was the second to last day of the NBA regular season and the final game for the Rockets, who again finish at 53-29, currently in the number four spot in the Western Conference. And the reason this game was so frustrating is that, of course, had the Rockets won it, they would have been the number two seed, clinched. Denver lost to Utah. They did everything that you could ask for. If you're a Rockets fan, everything was on the table. You were up by 13 going to the fourth, needing to close the deal. And just like that, your number two seed, most likely playing the Clippers in round one and forcing the Thunder to the eighth spot. And to me, that's what's most debilitating about this. This Thunder squad, again, Russell Westbrook, 29, 12, and 10. Paul George, 27, and 9, including the game winner. They are really talented. I know there are issues down the stretch of the year, but they are capable of beating anyone. That's why they've beaten Houston three or four times. And with one loss, they would have been in the eighth spot because they lose a three-way tie between the Thunder, the Spurs, and the Clippers. So to me, the biggest takeaway is that the Warriors yet again catch a break. Just when it seemed that they were going to have to face Russell Westbrook and Paul George in round one, instead you get a reeling Clippers squad in all likelihood. Now, that is not final. If the Thunder lose today, they're in Milwaukee, and the Spurs and Clippers win, the Spurs are home against Dallas, the Clippers are home against a Jazz squad with nothing to play for. If that happens, the Thunder could still be the eighth seed. However, it's unlikely because the Thunder are playing in Milwaukee against a Bucks team with nothing to play for and one that has already said they're resting Giannis and several other players up and down the roster. So unless Milwaukee is incentivized and doesn't sound like they are to potentially give Golden State a tougher run in round one out of fear of perhaps a finals matchup down the line, I suppose you could argue that, but it doesn't seem that the Bucks are focused on that. Their priority seems to be rest. I have a tough time blaming them. They've earned it, winning 60 games and clinching the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. It doesn't seem like they're going to take it all that seriously. And if they don't, then the Thunder are the sixth seed, and they're going to play most likely the third-seeded Portland Trail Blazers, who they went 4-0 against this season. And the Thunder, even though they're six, I would honestly say that they would be favored out of the 2-3-6-7 bracket. To me, they are by far the best of those teams, including Denver and Portland. And if that's the case, the Thunder could be waiting for you in the Western Conference Finals, even if you somehow get past Golden State. And to me, that's the real takeaway for the Rockets. As far as falling the number four seed, they still have home court in round one. I do think Houston has a fairly favorable matchup against Utah. I think the Jazz have a tough time generating the offense to beat Houston four times out of seven. We've seen that theme come up a lot this season, and the last two, really, when these two teams have played. So in round one, I don't think it's all that damaging. And down the line, there's a reason why it's been a debate. Do you want Golden State in the second round when presumably Harden, CP3, they're fresher, or do you want them in the Western Conference Finals? And there are some people that have articulated a perfectly logical argument that maybe the Rockets should want to play Golden State in round two rather than round three, since the Rockets don't have the depth of stars that the Warriors do. And if there's a matter of attrition and legs getting tired, perhaps that damages the Rockets disproportionately more than the Warriors. So to me, it's not so much that angle. Personally, I would have preferred being on the other side because who knows? Maybe it's like 94 when the Sonics lost and that was the one seed the Rockets couldn't get over. Well, then they didn't even have to play them. Because of that angle, I would rather be on the opposite side of the bracket, defer as late as possible. That said, if you take the position, and it's logical that no one is capable of beating Golden State other than Houston, then you got to play them anyway. And you can certainly mount an argument, even if I don't fully agree. We're all kind of speculating and guessing here that round two is easier from a leg standpoint. And I do think we saw that at times with James Harden in the fourth quarter of Tuesday's game. Maybe that's a little bit easier than round three. You can make the case. So to me, that's not so much the crushing aspect of this. The frustrating part is letting Golden State off the hook with an easy round one matchup against the Clippers. They're reeling, they're not that talented, and they don't even have to leave the state. And this is a Warriors squad that now has Steph Curry dealing with an ankle injury. He tweaked it last night, and it remains to be seen what his status is, how close to 100% he is. I'm sure he'll play, but to what efficiency, that remains to be seen once the playoffs open this weekend. This should have been karma, and I use that loosely, not to say that the Warriors are a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. No, they're a great team, and they're deserving champions, but they have gotten breaks over the past few years with injuries to the teams that they have played, and this seemed a perfect opportunity for the Warriors to finally get a disproportionately strong team for their seed. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Yet another break goes their way. And so to me, that's the biggest storyline. It's not even so much about the Rockets dropping from 2 or 3 to 4. It's more about you had the Thunder looking right at the 8 spot, waiting for Golden State in round one. And now, in all likelihood, that's not going to happen. Now, it still could. I would say if you're a Rockets fan, final day of the regular season tonight, cheer like hell for the Bucks to somehow beat the Thunder. And even though they're sitting a lot of the regulars, the Bucks are a really deep and well-coached team. Crazier things have happened. The Thunder will be on night two of a split back-to-back. They had to spend a lot of energy on the front end, yada, yada. So crazier things have happened. And if that happens, the Spurs and the Clippers, considering the Jazz are now locked into the 5, that Jazz-Clippers game should have no incentive for Utah. So if somehow OKC loses at Milwaukee, they can still be the 8th seed. You can cheer for it. I just don't think it's likely because Oklahoma City has a ton to play for. Milwaukee, not so much. And in my opinion, the best opportunity for the Rockets to have the 8th seed as Oklahoma City facing the Warriors in round one, that probably slipped away last night. So to me, from a standing standpoint, the Oklahoma City-Milwaukee game is by far the biggest because really, you could still get the 2 or the 3. Now, the scenarios, Denver and Minnesota. If Denver loses at home to Minnesota, Houston is the 2 because that would force a 3-way tie between the Nuggets, the Blazers, and the Rockets. Even though the Rockets lose a 2-way tie with Portland, that's why they're number 4 at the moment, they'd win a 3-way tie because then that defaults back to division winners, which is Houston and Denver, and then the Rockets-Nuggets tiebreaker is applied. Problem is, the Wolves are playing out the string. They were crushed at home last night by Toronto, and now it doesn't look like Karl Anthony Towns is going to play. A lot of their other regulars are not as well. So because of that, I think the odds of Minnesota winning at Denver on night 2 of a split back-to-back, they're pretty remote. You can cheer for them, but I think as far as the 2 seed, last night was the Rockets' opportunity, and now that's out the window. What I could see as a bit more feasible is the 3 seed. Portland nearly lost. It took a game winner at the buzzer last night for Mo Harkless against the Lakers, and the Blazers without Yusuf Nurkic, still working back CJ McCollum. They're at home against the Sacramento Kings. The Kings are a bit more feisty. They're not on night 2 of a road back-to-back the way that Minnesota will be. So I'd say Sacramento at Portland, I see that as slightly more possible than Minnesota at Denver. And I think you could also argue, until Portland puts all of its regulars on the floor, perhaps Portland tries to get in the 4-5 matchup. You could certainly mount a case for it. I think maybe they don't because that put them on the side of Golden State in round 2. But in round 1, Portland was 0-4 against Oklahoma City this year. And that's what, if they hold on to the 3 seed, they get. Whereas they fall to the 4, then they get Utah in round 1. And they make the Rockets the 3 seed facing this Oklahoma City team that's now beaten them 3 out of 4 times. And that's so much upside with Russell Westbrook and Paul George. I could see the Kings just have their own merits because I don't think the Blazers are world beaters at the moment, given their state with all the injuries, that kind of stuff. And it also wouldn't floor me. I'd be a little surprised, but it wouldn't be shocking if maybe the Blazers said, hey, do we really want the 3 seed and facing Oklahoma City, who we went 0-4 against, when we could drop to 4 and get Utah? So that one wouldn't floor me, but from a Rockets standpoint, I just don't see it as that important. Because whether you're the 3 or the 4, I guess you're on the other side of the bracket than the Warriors, but ultimately the 3 seed against OKC, the 4 seed against Utah, I actually think their odds are a little bit better against Utah in round 1. I just think that matchup is a bit better for the Rockets. The length collectively, the Thunder gave the Rockets so much trouble this season, especially on Tuesday night. I think that's difficult. So to me, as I'm the Rockets, looking around the league, the biggest game is actually OKC-Milwaukee, in my opinion. I suppose you could say Minnesota at Denver, because, yeah, if you get to the 2 spot, then having home court in 2 rounds, yeah, that's a big deal. I just find that incredibly unlikely. You can hope for it, and maybe Minnesota shocks the world. Crazier things have happened. But from a realistic standpoint, a Bucks team that is really deep, playing at home, OKC at night two of a road back-to-back, and then the upside of putting OKC in the 8th seed to play the Warriors, to me, that is the most reasonable thing that you can hope for on finale night. I still don't think it's likely, but to me, that's the game I'm keeping my eye on. Can the Bucks, or what's left of them, mount a challenge? If they can, I don't know that it helps the Rockets that much directly. Again, the Rockets are locked in the 4 unless Denver or Portland lose. But what I feel like was the biggest hit for the Rockets in their long-term odds, based on everything that happened Tuesday night, was actually the fact that it made the road for Golden State so much easier. There is one opportunity to change that. That's the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't think it's likely, but until it happens, you can hope. And that's what I'll be doing tonight, right along with you guys. Final thoughts as we close out Wednesday's longer than usual program, because really there's a ton to get to in this one. The gut punch of a loss, the standings impact, so many storylines. We'll try and keep it more brief the remainder of the week as we turn our attention to the playoff series. We'll have some previews in the days ahead once that matchup is sorted out tonight. In my opinion, Houston is the 4, Utah as the 5 seems likely, but the Spurs, the Clippers, even the Thunder, all of those still have scenarios where they could be the Rockets' first-round opponents as well. Here in the third and final segment of today's show, I do want to turn our attention to what went right for the Rockets, and clearly to me, the two guys that flashed the most on Tuesday in Oklahoma City were Chris Paul and Gerald Green, who between them shot 10 of 18, better than 50% from three-point range on high volume. And honestly, they're the biggest reason why the Rockets didn't have a lull until the fourth quarter. Late in the third, early in the fourth, in terms of what changed, the Thunder were always defending the Rockets really well. You could see Harden starting to tire, the physical pounding. They fought through the screens on the perimeter. Steven Adams was allowed a ton of contact on his drives. And even in the third, you could start to see some of the mileage taking effect on James. He was not as dynamic as when he scored 26 in the first half. Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Daniel House, they were breaking shots throughout. And how did the Rockets stay in striking distance? Because Chris Paul and Gerald Green shot 18 threes and made more than half of them. They just made some really tough shots, and that's what kept the Rockets afloat until finally those started to rim out in the fourth quarter, and that's when the Thunder pounced and made their run. The most interesting angle is Green, because I said after Sunday's game, he had not been a rotation player for 2 weeks. In large part, Iman Shumpert had taken his minutes. Now they're also trying to get some data on Shumpert since she's so new. And then in the biggest game of the season, Shumpert got a DNP CD and Green played, which surprised me. I was expecting Nene over Fried, which did happen, and Shumpert over Green. My guess as to why they went with Green is that against an Oklahoma City defense that can be so daunting, they just wanted more shot-making potential, and it worked out. Gerald Green played over Shumpert, and he played well. Kudos to him. I still don't know if every matchup, like, for example, the Jazz goes that way, but I think with the Thunder and how they can defend you on the perimeter, you just need guys that can make tough shots. That's what Gerald did. Nene and Fareed, that went the way I expected. Rockets erred on the side of stability, the veteran presence of Nene, whereas Fareed, well, he's a better rebounder, and you could argue that the Rockets minus 14 in the glass against the larger Thunder needed that. I also think his defensive deficiencies are so glaring that it's tough to say, wow, the Rockets clearly should have been undersized and played Kenneth Fareed as your backup five. I think that is very Monday morning quarterback. And the same goes, I've seen some wondering, well, why couldn't Shumpert have played over Daniel House? Look, I know House had a bad game. He didn't score, missed all 4 of his threes. We know what his upside is. If they had played Shumpert over House in the biggest game of the season and the Rockets had lost, most of Rockets Twitter would have had pitchforks. It would have been a brutal scene. So I understand you have to err on the side of upside. Daniel House Jr., he's been a guy who all season long has been a part of your turnaround. He just had a bad game in a key moment. It happens. And Green over Shumpert, I was a little surprised, but ultimately it worked out. Kudos to Jeff Bezdelic, Mike D'Antoni, perhaps from his hospital bed, the plan they mapped out. I thought that went pretty well. Honestly, this wasn't a game. I know the Rockets didn't have Mike D'Antoni, but I didn't see anything from a coaching standpoint that said, wow, this was something they did that was obviously wrong, and this is how they fix it, and if they do, they win the game. Other than Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker needing to make more shots, I'm not really sure what you look at and you say, wow, tactically, this is where we went wrong. No, the Rockets, I thought they played relatively well. They just went up against a good Oklahoma City defense, and unfortunately, the Rockets had one of their lulls at the worst time, and I think that's more of a really 30,000-foot view situation in terms of the composition of the roster, the style, the way this is put together, rather than the attack, the game plan in any one game. If there's one tweak I think you could argue for, I mentioned Fareed over Nene. Personally, I think Fareed's defensive liabilities are too much, but you could at least argue it because Fareed's a better rebounder, more springs. You could also make a case that with Eric Gordon, when he's off, maybe you turn to more Austin Rivers down the stretch of the game. We had so much Chris Paul, James Harden, 1-2 pick and roll. Perhaps if Eric Gordon's not going to be handling the ball anyway and he's not really spacing the floor because he's missing the open shots, perhaps you want Austin Rivers, who's clearly a better defender and gives you a slightly more diverse game offensively with his ability to take the ball off the bounce. He's also more steady. There were some turnovers in the fourth quarter of that game. Overall, the Rockets had just 11 turnovers, but a lot of them came at awful times. Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker in particular, had some terrible passes in the fourth quarter of the game. If you rewatch, perhaps Austin Rivers is a bit more steadying, but he's also not the same floor spacer in terms of the balance of his season and making the defense respect his positioning on the court as much as Eric Gordon. So to me, you could argue that, but I don't think it's a slam dunk decision. Really, I think the Rockets, tactically, I mean, the biggest thing they did tonight, they brought Gerald Green off the shelf after barely playing the last 2 weeks. He had 15 points in 15 minutes, made 5 threes, and that's how the Rockets stayed afloat for the first 40 minutes or so of the game until the Thunder really put the clamps on late. The defense really wasn't that radically different what the Thunder were doing in the third quarter when the Rockets scored 33 to the fourth when they scored 18. It's just in the third, Gerald Green, Chris Paul, they made some really tough threes that kept the offense clicking during tough spots. In the fourth quarter, they didn't. And between Chris Paul not being really the same one-on-one player he was a year ago, not being able to create separation quite as easily, and then what to me appeared like fatigue issues with James Harden, the Rockets, once the threes weren't falling, just did not have another plan B to turn to. And as far as how they fix it, I covered that a lot in segment one, but really I don't know that the fix is anything X's and O's wise that they can execute right now. If that ends up not working out, it's probably going to have to be something that they discuss at a much higher level view in the offseason. That's a ways away, though. For now, the clear priority is the playoffs and making the best that you can with this 53-29 Rockets team. Now the regular season for Houston is complete, and so that's what we'll turn our attention to here at Locked On Rockets in the coming days. This will do it for Wednesday's show, but please stay tuned because Thursday, Friday, the duration of the week, once the playoff matchup is known, we'll be talking about it. We'll have preview shows, get you guys set for what will be a fun weekend at Toyota Center. Looks like the number 4 seed could be number 2, the number 3, whatever it is. So the Rockets will open the playoffs at home at Toyota Center, the friendly confines this weekend, Saturday or Sunday. So hopefully the Rockets can bounce back then. Should have a friendlier matchup than the Thunder in all likelihood. Whatever the case, though, we'll be right here at Locked On Rockets to break it all down. If you want more content before our next show, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Website, LockedOnRockets.com. Email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those are ways you can get in contact with me, ask me questions about the team, check out prior episodes, interact, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and please let me know. As always, thank you for listening, and please remember that you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets, and you can find it there as well. Once again, the unhappy final from OKC on Tuesday night. Thunder 112, Rockets 111. The loss drops the Rockets to 53-29 as they close out the regular season. Quite a recovery from being 11-14. They have won 20 of their last 24 basketball games, so not all is lost, but certainly some of the flaws, in my opinion, that we saw, especially the offensive lulls down the stretch late in the fourth quarter. In my estimation, they're a bit ominous, and I don't think they bode that well for some of the really tough matchups you're likely to have in the Western Conference playoffs coming up. I hope I'm wrong, though, and of course, whatever happens, we'll be right here to talk about it at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of everything Houston Rockets basketball.